How would you grade the Cleveland Browns offseason with Deshaun Watson on your roster? This was the biggest question of the entire offseason moves, in my opinion, before I came into this week. And today, I'd like to give you my final result on what I think of the Cleveland Browns based on the Deshaun Watson dilemma going on in Ohio. And with that will come the rest of the AFC North on today's summer edition of NFL Study Hall. My name is Cade Chumsland. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We're going to go through the Cleveland Browns, and we'll break down the Baltimore Ravens, Cincinnati Bengals, and Pittsburgh Steelers. But of course, the entire hype this week, the entire hype around the NFL has been solely revolving around one man and one man only, and his name is Deshaun Watson. And as a long time, in fact, lifetime, Houston Texans die-hard, passionate through thick and thin fan, I feel the most qualified to give my opinion. You can forget facts, forget details, forget whatever you want, a straight-up fan opinion. I am honored to do this episode today. Before we get into the rest of Cleveland's offseason, which, foreshadowing, is not terrible, we got to look into the Deshaun Watson dilemma, whether this trade was actually worth it, and what has been going on in this entire two-year process, what seems like a two-year process, to where we are today. On January 28th, 2021, Deshaun Watson requested a trade out of Houston. After just signing in the fall season a four-year, $156 million contract, which kind of blows my mind considering he signed that contract knowing DeAndre Hopkins wasn't on the roster. Part of my theory is that he signed this contract knowing he's going to bail on the team in the spring. That whole DeAndre Hopkins thing, I've talked about that thousands of times. But I think that was the start of Deshaun Watson wanting out of Houston. So he demands a trade. We're talking straight up Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant type style, as that's what's been going on in the news lately in sports. He wants out. He's not going to play for the Houston Texans anymore. He needs to get out of that. That was back in January 20th, 2021. On March 16th, he gets his first lawsuit. March 16, 2021, his first lawsuit comes up. He immediately goes on Twitter and denies all the allegations. It was a strong and immediate denial, but I never got the impression that he was going to fight super hard about it. Nevertheless, on April 5th, the final lawsuit of this session, which was 2.5 weeks of lawsuits coming in, the final number tallied 22, including some that involved criminal charges. 22 civil lawsuits and some hints at criminal charges. That was April 5th. On July 25th, he reports to training camp for Houston to make his money. On October 26th, Commissioner Goodell says that the NFL does not have sufficient information to put Watson on the exempt list. So he's waiting for all the allegations and all the lawsuits to go through that process and for the NFL to go through their own process before they make a decision on Deshaun Watson, which I wasn't too concerned about. I felt like he should have been suspended at some point then and there for just the lawsuits in general, considering there were 22 of them, but you don't want to make a final decision until the courts have made their decisions. No problem. Go for it. I do have questions about what they were doing the entire season, because the next thing that comes up from the courts, besides discussions and besides meetings, is that on March 11th, 7 months later, or six months later, the courts finally say that Deshaun Watson is clear of criminal charges. In my mind, as the commissioner, this is what I'm thinking. Okay, if he's cleared of the criminal charges, he can stay in the NFL. If it's criminal charges, at this level, with this many women, you cannot play in the NFL anymore. That is, you're gone. This is just, you're done. There is no way we have an argument to keep you in the NFL. So when the courts clear him of the criminal charges, now you make another decision. How long are we going to suspend him? Not fine him. The man's made of money. You can't do that. But how long are we going to suspend him? I would have loved for Roger Goodell to have made this decision in the week before Deshaun Watson was actually treated, because I believe the Cleveland Browns have been ripped off a first round draft pick for Deshaun Watson that might not even play the regular season this year. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. But from March 11th to March 18th, the NFL said nothing about Deshaun Watson's status for the 2022 season. Sure enough, he gets traded to the Cleveland Browns and signs a five-year, $230 million contract, fully guaranteed money. What? Are we serious here? You don't even know how these lawsuits, the civil lawsuits, had been undecided. It was just criminal that had been decided. Civil lawsuits undecided. No discipline so far from the NFL has been said. And you're going to fully guarantee him $230 million. After you're already paying massive money to Myles Garrett on the defensive end. Cleveland's not a massive market. These are the two guys they're going head over heels over. They also lost three first-round draft picks and a third and a fourth in the process. So not only are you using a draft pick from the 2022 season, you're losing two other ones in the following seasons just for Deshaun Watson that might not play this season, and who knows if he's going to want to stay in Cleveland in the following seasons. He clearly is a one-man show, he believes. And this Cleveland team demands a lot out of him. And if he doesn't feel comfortable, he might want out of Cleveland as well. Going over to March 20th. So March 18th, he does the deal. March 20th, Cleveland reports that they did their research, but it was also reported on the same day that no team had contacted the attorney of the plaintiffs to ask him about his opinion on the cases. So all the NFL teams, which were like seven of them that were interested in Deshaun Watson, never were concerned about how the lawsuits were going to go down. All they wanted was Deshaun Watson. That's a little bit insulting, actually a lot insulting, to the women who are filing these lawsuits. And it shows a lot about what we think about a quarterback in the NFL with the talents of Deshaun Watson, who, by the way, apparently has a mind of his own on where he wants to play. So I thought that was super interesting. On March 24th, the county denies another criminal charge. So again, confirming clear of criminal charges. On March 25th, Watson finally speaks to the public on an introductory press conference denying everything that's been going on. March 29th, the commissioner is reported to not making a decision. He will not make a decision on Deshaun Watson. That will go from the NFL and the NFL Players Association. Skip almost a month. On April 19th, Watson reports to offseason workouts for the Browns, which he did not do the previous season. All he did was go to training camp that was mandatory for his pay. And then there was a meeting with the NFL from May 16th to the 18th, which went all right. On May 31st, following a HBO special the week before, from a woman who is filing a lawsuit giving graphic details on what happened between herself and Watson, two other lawsuits on May 31st and June 6th come in, totaling the number to 24. It's June 6th, and there are 24 lawsuits against Deshaun Watson, civil lawsuits that have not been answered. June 7th, the New York Times report that there were 66 women that Deshaun Watson scheduled with over a 17-month period, furthering the garbage put on Deshaun Watson right now and securing his guiltiness in some form or fashion. Maybe not assault and criminal charges, but he did something. Rather than all his denials of it, he didn't do anything. He had to have done something. June 21st, this was just over a week ago, Deshaun Watson settles 20 of the 24 cases. Settles. That means paid them off. Not fighting head over heels to prove your innocence, like he said. Like literally multiple times he talked about clearing his name. In tweets, in press conferences, he wanted his name cleared. You do not clear your name by settling 20 of the 24 cases. You just don't do that. I was very disappointed with Deshaun Watson. I knew he was guilty up until that point, but you would have loved to seen this man fight a little bit more. This just, in my opinion, gave ammo for the NFL and the NFLPA to put down a hammer on Deshaun Watson. This past week, from June 28th to the 30th, right now it's July 1st, so yesterday they finished their meeting. The NFL and the NFLPA met to decide whether to discipline Deshaun Watson. They didn't make a final decision. Hearings are due the week of July 11th. So they're pushing for a season-long suspension, but nothing has been confirmed yet, which I'm still frustrated about. As the Cleveland Browns organization, you have to be extremely frustrated with how the NFL is taking this situation. This is their franchise quarterback. Their next three seasons, based on draft picks, are based on this guy. And you're going to leave them hanging? He might miss the entire season. The Cleveland Browns are now struggling to figure out who's going to play instead of Deshaun Watson, because Baker Mayfield didn't really want to be there anymore. But then he said, okay, I might come back. But they already signed Jacoby Brissett and Case Keenum in the offseason. So who are you going to start out of those three guys? It has been an absolute mess for the Cleveland Browns organization. I feel bad for every Cleveland Browns fan. The guys who should be feeling the best right now are actually the Houston Texans, although they're in a little bit of law trouble of their own because now the women are attacking the Houston Texans for not having done anything, and we'll see how that goes. And I don't want to make opinion on that yet. But you got away with not having to pay the man the full $156 million, picking up three first-round draft picks from the Cleveland Browns, and not having this man on your back anymore, and now you're able to excel, hopefully, with and thrive and nurture a second-year quarterback in Davis Mills, who I have high hopes for in the 2022 season. I like where my team is headed in the upcoming years. Now that whole debacle is down. If Deshaun Watson goes clean this year, which I am praying he doesn't, then the Cleveland Browns are getting away with a lot, and they can compete in the AFC. Most likely, though, there will be some form of serious suspension. Now that we've gone past all that, and I haven't talked about that in months or years since it started, but now we know what's going on. Here's the rest of the Cleveland Browns offseason, which I think hasn't been too bad. In the draft, they didn't get a pick till the third round, but they got three of them. Their biggest two coming from their first one in cornerback Martin Emerson from Mississippi State. He's scheduled to back up Denzel Ward. But the bigger one, wide receiver David Bell from Purdue, will be the third starting wide receiver for the Cleveland Browns. He had a lot of potential coming out of Purdue. Wasn't really projected high on the big board of wide receivers because everyone was so stacked. But had all those Ohio State and Alabama's wide receivers not been there, this man was a prospect number top five wide receiver in this NFL draft class. He should work in there nicely as the third wide receiver, having lost Jarvis Landry. But coming in for the new number one wide receiver, one of the biggest steals of the entire offseason, wide receiver Amari Cooper, comes from Dallas, and all the Cleveland Browns lost were a fifth round pick and a sixth round pick, and they even picked up a sixth round pick from the Dallas Cowboys. So basically, you pick up Amari Cooper, who was once a top 10 wide receiver in the entire NFL, for a fifth round draft pick. I mean, forget it. You already gave up all your other draft picks for Deshaun Watson. You can afford a fifth round draft pick all day long. It was an absolute steal. Another wide receiver who's more of a special teams man than anything is Jakeem Grant, who came from the Miami Dolphins and then the Chicago Bears. I always knew him from the Miami Dolphins. He played a little bit for the Chicago Bears last year. Isn't one of the fastest men in the NFL right now and is completely explosive on the special team side in the punt return and kickoff return game. I already mentioned Jacoby Brissett and Case Keenum. Other than that, there weren't too many huge offseason signings, but they did make a couple clutch extensions on their defense and offensive side. Cornerback Denzel Ward got a 5-year extension, and tight end David Njoku got a 4 or 5-year extension. I forget which one it was, but extending both Denzel Ward and David Njoku, especially when you also lost Austin Hooper, are big in securing these guys for the future. And you also re-signed defensive end Jadeveon Clowney. On the defensive side, I think these Cleveland Browns are absolutely stacked. You've got Denzel Ward. You've got Greg Newsome II, who absolutely exploded last year. You've got Myles Garrett, who we all know about. And then you've secured Jadeveon Clowney. This is a defense that was top 5 in yards allowed passing last year. These guys have it in them. I believe the failure of last year's Cleveland Browns is mainly on their quarterback, Baker Mayfield, who couldn't help himself but throw an interception last year. Their specialty players didn't explode like we thought they would, with Jarvis Landry at the helm and Donovan Peoples-Jones, who did come in a big way. But otherwise, that was really it. Nick Chubb obviously had a great season. This roster has kind of remained the same, but the addition of Amari Cooper and some of these other young guys from the draft should help a lot in the passing game. Their whole entire offseason has been and will be based on the success of Deshaun Watson, whether he plays or not. If he plays, I give the offseason for the Cleveland Browns an A. I think they kept the lineup they needed to, got in some specialty players on the passing side. They still have a solid offensive line. But for right now, it's a B- because I think they should have been a little bit more careful, maybe not given as many draft picks, knowing that Deshaun Watson wouldn't be ready in 2022. B- for the Cleveland Browns. Well, that was a lot, and maybe the most I ever want to talk about the Cleveland Browns ever on this podcast. So now we're going to go into a team that I believe did not get enough respect last year and not enough respect in this offseason that they should. And that's the Baltimore Ravens. This is a team that went to the division round of the playoffs 2 years ago, and a team that had their quarterback not gone down for 4 crucial games at the end of last season might have made another playoff run this year. The Baltimore Ravens had one of the worst injury-prone seasons I have ever seen in the NFL. J.K. Dobbins goes out preseason. You lose a couple other running backs, and then Lamar Jackson goes down, not to mention some defensive guys left as well. It was atrocious. Someone was going down every week. You look at a healthy Ravens roster this year, and I consider them to be one of the top, at least top 5 teams in the AFC. What were the biggest things that were criticized about the Ravens last year? Secondary and offensive line. Well, what'd they do in the offseason? They went ahead and got secondary and offensive line. You look at who they drafted. Top safety in the draft, Kyle Hamilton from Notre Dame. Who else did they get? Center, #1, Tyler Linderbaum from Iowa. And then what did they do later in the draft? Go and grab the top outside linebacker in the draft, David Ajabu from Michigan. So they got 3 #1 position players, and all of them were needed on their team. They also go out and sign one of the other biggest steals of the offseason for most analysts, safety veteran Marcus Williams from New Orleans, who had 2 interceptions last year. Not his best, but he's definitely a man who has had experience in the league with a fantastic secondary in New Orleans, coming to a great secondary in Baltimore. Next secondary man up, cornerback Kyle Fuller from Denver, who had that spectacular season last year with one of the best secondaries in the league. So that's 3 secondary men you're grabbing that are brand new to contribute to a Creed Humphrey and a Marcus Peters-led secondary that may have struggled last year with injuries. In fact, they were the worst team in the NFL when it came to passing yards allowed by quite a margin. You're going to grab three guys who have the potential to be, who all have potentials to be Pro Bowlers this season. This just became one of the most lethal secondaries in the entire NFL. Still not done with the offensive line, though. Going and grabbing tackle Morgan Moses, who played for years with the Washington, what used to be Redskins football team, Commanders. Played his last season with the New York Jets, but this man has unbelievable talent, multiple Pro Bowler. He is going to be huge when it comes to this type of young offensive line in Baltimore. One more addition on the defensive side, they also went and got nose tackle Michael Pierce, who had 3 sacks last year with the Minnesota Vikings, played his first 3 seasons with the Baltimore Ravens, and now he's coming back home. There weren't too many losses. The only ones that really make a huge difference are their specialty wide receivers, the biggest one coming on draft day with Marquise Brown going to the Arizona Cardinals. Sammy Watkins, who didn't make as big of an impact last year as I thought he was going to, also heads to Green Bay. So they pick up huge men on the secondary, help out that offensive line. You lose quite a few guys on the specialty wide receiver slot, which means Rashad Bateman's going to be your number one receiver outside of tight end Mark Andrews. But I don't necessarily think those wide receivers are going to hurt them as much as the help they're getting on the offensive line and defense. Plus, everyone keeps forgetting about this, and I keep mentioning it, but J.K. Dobbins coming back into the lineup is going to be the biggest. He might win comeback player of the year, guys. I genuinely believe J.K. Dobbins will be a stud in the NFL. I'm going to pick him up on my fantasy team. I think he's got that potential, even with a running quarterback in Lamar Jackson. I absolutely loved what these Baltimore Ravens have done. I'm giving them an A- for my grade and potentially my favorite for the AFC North in 2022. Moving on to the Cincinnati Bengals, this is the team that really didn't need to do much this offseason, and they really didn't do much, but they addressed the one place they needed to address. First of all, in the draft, they went ahead and got 2 safeties in Daxton Hill from Michigan and Cam Taylor-Britt from Nebraska, who aren't necessarily going to be needed much this season, but to help out that secondary was definitely one place they needed to go after being exposed by Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp in the Super Bowl. But that being said, the biggest thing that had to have happened this offseason was boosting that offensive line. Joe Burrow was the most sacked quarterback in the NFL last year. The most sacked quarterback, and they made a Super Bowl. All you got to do is step up this offensive line, keep up the amazing play caller by Zach Taylor, who got an extension this year, which I think is one of the most brilliant extensions this team did this offseason. So what do they do in the offseason for offensive line? They went ahead and go huge veteran in Lyle Collins from Dallas, Alex Kappa from Tampa Bay, and Ted Karras from New England. 3 huge offensive lineman veterans that are going to boost this weak interior front. So you were already good on the defensive trench with Trey Hendrickson. Now you're good on the offensive side of the trench, and that should be able to boost Cincinnati past the hump of where they need to go. Joe Burrow's already there. 3 best wide receivers on their team, could be the best trio on the NFL status. And then also Joe Mixon in the backfield. This offensive line and offensive setup is set for even more greatness than they had last year. We'll see how their secondary pulls in with some young guys. I love where the Cincinnati team is going to be. This AFC, guys, is absolutely stacked. We talked about the AFC West a few weeks ago. This AFC North with Baltimore and Cincinnati is going to be crazy as well. I cannot wait to see how this schedule goes down and where these teams end up. For the grade, I'm going to give them a B. I don't think they did anything huge. I think they did exactly what they needed to do with the offensive line, and that's just about this. Actually, we'll make that an A minus. Same with the Baltimore Ravens, addressing what you needed to do. Exactly what the Ravens did is exactly what the Cincinnati Bengals did, exactly where both teams need to be to fight for this division later. I don't even think it's close. Cleveland might do well with Deshaun Watson, but for me, Baltimore and Cincinnati are just on another tier. Finally, the Pittsburgh Steelers. I am going to give a solid B. This team basically swapped out a ton of players. They never really got anyone they needed, but they didn't lose anybody that they need to lose or that damage their team. In the draft, I think they did great. You grab Kenny Pickett from Pittsburgh, the only quarterback to go in the first round. You also sign Mitchell Trubisky, so now there's a quarterback battle. Neither quarterback, I think, is fantastic, but maybe they can go a little bit better than old Ben Roethlisberger from last year. You also sign wide receiver George Pickens, who is going to come in and replace either Juju Smith-Schuster or James Washington that you lost over the offseason. You also, in the signings, you got a great offensive lineman in James Daniel. You also grab, on the defensive side, Larry Ogunjobi, who came from Cincinnati, Miles Jack, who's a massive linebacker and a quick linebacker from Jacksonville, as well as Levi Wallace, who came from that beautiful Buffalo secondary. In the offseason, you lose Joe Schobert, which I don't think is a huge deal because you brought in Miles Jack. You lost, I mentioned before, the two wide receivers in Juju Smith-Schuster and James Washington. Juju Smith-Schuster just was not finding his rhythm in Pittsburgh as the number one wide receiver. Hopefully he can have a better situation in Kansas City as potentially their number one wide receiver there. But James Washington is an easy replacement, or George Pickens is an easy replacement for James Washington. No big deal there. And then finally, Joe Hayden, their veteran cornerback, replaced with Levi Wallace. Maybe is a downgrade, but I think Levi Wallace, they both had two interceptions last year. Actually, no. Joe Hayden had two interceptions 2 years ago because he was hurt most of last year. Levi Wallace coming off a two interception year. I think those two guys kind of cancel out as well. They also were able to re-sign safety Terrell Edmonds and Chucks Okafor on the offensive line. Probably the biggest offseason move besides the whole quarterback battle that's going on is the massive contract sign by Minka Fitzpatrick, 4 year, $73.6 million a year, making him the highest paid safety in the entire NFL. And how can you blame him? It's Minka Fitzpatrick. He led this defense to be unstoppable in the secondary. TJ Watt has that interior all handled up. This is a defense that is primed to do exactly what they did last year and basically carry their team to the promised land of the playoffs. This is all going to come down again, just like Cleveland, to the quarterback play. I would also love to see another breakout season from Najee Harris. The man was absolutely robbed of doing anything great last year. The team itself only had 91.1 rushing yards per game. That was 30th in the NFL. This offensive line didn't do terrible with protecting their quarterback, but they could not help their star running back whatsoever. Expect Mike Tomlin, even though he's going to be experimenting with quarterbacks, to use the prime star of Najee Harris more this season and get that run game going. Overall, I got to give them a B, though. I don't think they hurt their team at all, but I don't think they got them to the next level like the rest of not only their division, but the entire AFC. But they're trending in the right direction depending on how their quarterback situation goes. Well, all right, guys, there is your entire AFC North breakdown. I am loving what I'm seeing from a lot of these teams. There's so many questions revolving around that quarterback position, and they'll probably be answered very quickly in the 2022 season. Can't wait to see what happens. Thank you guys so much for following me on Instagram and Twitter, trying to boost that social media this year. And I'll talk to you guys next Friday as I break down the NFC North. Peace out.